Welcome to Deloitte's Fed Central program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Here's your host, Jay Norris.
Welcome to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte, a program where executives and federal government leaders talk about the issues and initiatives that are making a real impact on the business of government today to help government help America. On today's program, we'll be talking about keeping America safe, the new defense strategy. And joining us, General Charles F. Wald, Director of Deloitte Services LP and leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense Practice Federal Government Services. He's responsible for providing senior leadership in strategy and relationships with the Department of Defense, and he's a subject matter specialist in weapons procurement and deployment, counterterrorism, national and energy, and international security policy. Also joining us, and we're proud to have, General James Jones. General Jones is former National Security Advisor and 32nd Commandant of the Marine Corps. He's a senior advisor to Deloitte's federal and commercial clients and Department of Defense practice, and he was appointed National Security Advisor to President Barack Obama on January 20th, 2009. General Jones, happy to have you here.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here.
It's a pleasure, sir. And then finally, the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia congressman and known to many on this radio show. We've heard him many times. He was formerly chairman of the House Government and Reform Committee. He serves as the director of federal government affairs for Deloitte and Touche LLP. Tom, great to have you too.
Jane, thanks for having me.
It's a great show today. So let's get started. The Department of Defense and officials at the Department of Defense have announced their plan for a proposed $614 billion budget in fiscal year 2013. And they plan spending reductions of about $487 billion over the next decade. So, General Wald, we'll start with you. How do you think this will impact the new DoD strategy going forward?
Actually, I think it's in line with the strategy. I think and General Jones will probably talk about this in a minute, but if you look at the geostrategic environment we live in the world today, it really addresses how we are facing the threats we're facing. So with Afghanistan and Iraq winding down, but in a perpetual conflict kind of situation we are right today, and the fact that we're a global world, we need to maintain our global presence. So the reduction in the numbers, a lot of that will come from the reduction of our presence in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then the remainder, even though it sounds like a large cut over 10 years, there'll still be a large baseline available. And I think to address the threats that we think we're going to face in the future, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape. So,
General Jones, I mean, how do you see this?
Well, I agree with General Wald you know, I think we have to see this in perspective. While it's true that the U.S. military will be smaller and leaner under the president's plan, the defense budget will remain essentially constant over the next 10 years, and it'll keep the plan calls for it to keep pace with inflation. So the well-publicized budget reductions as such are actually reductions in projected budget increases. So I think that what's going to happen is necessary and appropriate. I wouldn't want to go too far and say that this is going to cause a magical solution for our national debt and everything else. And we shouldn't kid ourselves that you can solve that problem on the back of the Defense Department.
You know, a number of the chairmen of the committees are talking about undoing the sequestering, that these cuts are going to be very, very harmful. But it looks to me like the new strategy seems to be going in the direction of a smaller, leaner, flexible, but a technologically advanced military. So what kind of changes do you think we'll see, assuming that these, quote, cuts and the sequestering goes into effect?
I'll start with that, if you don't mind. But I think because of, we talked about this a little earlier, that because of better business practices, because of improved technology, because of the nature of the threat, the fact that we do have a superior technology capability in our military, whether that be space or in the air or land or sea, either any one of those, and our information capability with intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance actually is where the focus should be. And that's pretty much our sweet spot in America. And then you look at our ability to, and the reductions that General Jones mentioned a minute ago, where the military will get smaller based on just as you would in a commercial world, better business technology and practices are going to help us do our job on a daily basis. So I think with the right type of vision, the right type of application of business practices and technology, we're going to be just fine.
What do you see on the enforce as well? We draw that down a bit to be more flexible. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I after two conflicts come to an end, Iraq and then Afghanistan, it is essential that we right-size the force again. One of the things that concerns me is that when we take a look at the economic ramifications of right-sizing the force, I think everybody agrees that there should be some reductions. We know that the world is different now, and we know that large military bases overseas, with all of the costs that are associated with that presence, are probably not as necessary. But I have my favorite saying is virtual presence is actual absence. And for the United States to remain as a global leader, I would caution that you want to be careful that you, as you adjust the footprint around the world, that you do so very carefully so that you can retain a certain base force, but also can rapidly be augmented by an expeditionary capability, land, sea, and air. And I also think that two more points I would make. One is that we're dangerously close to making the all-volunteer force unaffordable if we don't tackle the issue of entitlements. And then the second issue that I think is an absolute must is that we have to tackle the acquisition process. We cannot afford to continually take 10 to 12, 15, sometimes 20 years to bring on a new fighter or a new ship or a new tank. First of all, our industry can do a lot better. And secondly, the taxpayer deserves a more efficient system that produces what the military needs. But, certainly before the technology that you're trying to replace runs out of service life. And in many cases, over the last 10 or 15 years, we have shown ourselves unable to reform the acquisition system in the Defense Department, and I think that's a high priority.
It's been tried before. Secretary Gates gave it a whack, and certainly Secretary, the current Secretary Panetta is making it a priority.
Yep. You need to do it, though, consistently. I'm almost of the opinion that the only way you do something like that is from the outside, because secretaries usually aren't there long enough, and there's built-in resistance to doing these kinds of things. Let's face it, it's about jobs, it's about career tracks. And these are wonderful people that work in the defense of this country. But in some areas, we just have not made the changes and the reforms that we need. And I think acquisition is one of them.
So why is that? I mean, do you think it's the resistance, internal resistance, or do you think there are other pressures that come to bear?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's a difficult thing to do. I mean, the entire military of the United States operates under the idea that leaders are there for, 2 to 4 years at max in any one job. And where that plays over into programs is you change program managers every 2 or 3 years. And, people being who they are, they come in and say, oh, no, we're not going to do it this way. We're going to add this. We're not going to do that. You subtract, you cut, and sooner or later you just have incredible delays and cost overruns and things like that. So, I think a company like Deloitte can really be helpful in helping the Department of Defense and the various service departments in really tracking the numbers in a way that makes more sense and is more cost effective and encourage. And because Deloitte is very well established over a long term, you can provide the glue that's needed to transition between from one leader to the other in different aspects of these reforms.
Is there more you think the Defense Department could be doing with shared services, between the Army and the Navy and the Air Force than doing them separately? I think there'd be a lot of savings in there if we could ever get them together. What do you foresee in that?
I think it's a balance. There is savings there. There's no doubt about it. My personal opinion is that there could be some common shared capabilities, probably even more so with the services. There's a balance of what the service chiefs and military bring from the standpoint of expertise in that particular area. So there, each service does bring a little bit different capacity to the fight. On the other hand, as we say a lot in Deloitte, is that, you know, the overhead part can be sometimes consolidated in a better way that gives you these savings. I would think, as the General Jones just mentioned, that this is really a matter of, first of all, I think there's an outside probably application that has to be placed on this because of the fact that it is very difficult to change internally sometimes while you're still doing your job and you advocate for that. And then number two is I think we're in a situation now because of both technology and capabilities, and in Deloitte's case, our commercial practices bring us a lot that we can apply to the department in more of a better business practice case. So I would agree with you.
Yeah.
So, Tom, from your perspective, you were in Congress. How does Congress see some of these acquisition challenges?
Well, it just depends where you sit. I think for members who have large bases in their district, I mean, they are dug in at this point. They're nervous about what that's going to do to their local economies. You've got to remember, the defense budget isn't just a national defense budget and a war budget. It's also a jobs machine. It's Congress's budget to a great extent. And so Congress has not always been that good and proactive in terms of making the appropriate changes. That's why it's got to come from the department itself as they look at that, and you need some congressional buy-in. It's interesting on the sequestering. Congress didn't know where to cut, couldn't agree on where to cut. They just said, we're going to leave it up to the department to sequester certain dollars and try to still get the mission done at the same time. But Congress is very parochial when it comes to the defense budget through time. That's been, I think, as much a part of the problem as the solution some days.
You know, the all-volunteer force was created in the mid-70s, and it was essentially a great idea that was superimposed on the conscripted model. And there were people back then in the 70s that said, if you don't watch it, this will become unaffordable. And whenever you see the manpower, the human costs, salaries, retirements, health care, cross over the 50% line of your basic budget, which it is now doing, you really have to take a look at that, because that gets into an unaffordable department and unaffordable forces. And so I think we are approaching the point where we need to absolutely take a look at this and react in a way that we can produce the force that is articulated in the defense strategy.
We're going to come back in just a moment. Our guest today on Fed Central, General Charles F. Wald. He's the director of Deloitte Services and the leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense Practice. And also General James Jones, who is the former National Security Advisor. And he is now also an advisor to Deloitte. And of course, Tom Davis, the former Virginia Congressman and chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. He's a director at Deloitte in the government affairs area. So we'll be back in just a moment here on Fed Central on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Defense and civilian agencies call upon Deloitte for the insights and experience they bring to their most complex challenges. Drawing from global resources, leading practices across government and industry, and a portfolio of capabilities in technology, data analytics, human capital, supply chain, and beyond, they help clients across defense and civilian achieve more today while building a stronger foundation for tomorrow. Learn more at www.deloitte.com/federal. Deloitte, helping government help America.
Welcome back to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte. Today, we're talking about keeping America safe, the new defense strategy. Joining us, General Charles Wald, Director of Deloitte Services and leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense Practice. Also here in studio, General James Jones, United States Marine Corps retired and former National Security Advisor and senior advisor to Deloitte. And also Tom Davis. The Honorable Tom Davis is a former Virginia congressman and former chairman of the House Government Oversight Committee. And he also serves as a director of federal government affairs for Deloitte & Touche LLP. Tom?
Well, thank you very much. General Jones, I'm going to ask a question. As we take a look ahead at what we're going to be doing with a military budget that will be flat in many ways, it won't be increasing with what we're used to. One element of the strategy seems to be built around strengthening innovative partnerships and key alliances around the world. What do you think the focus on this part of the strategy will be?
Well, I think it's extremely important that the United States strategy be one that produces a position in the world that Americans expect from the United States. And that is to say that we spent second half of the 20th century becoming a dominant nation of great influence and impact. You could, without being too immodest, I think you can say that the United States actually shaped the world for the latter half of the 20th century. Dissolution of the Soviet Union, and now all of a sudden we have an event of equally important significance, the so-called Arab Spring, that really should trigger this discussion about what do we do and how we do it. Because the world has changed so much and we have new peer rivals, in at least in economic terms, like Brazil, like India, like China, like still Japan, South Korea, the European Union, I think it's going to be very important that that as these phenomenons take place, that that the United States develop partnerships with like-minded countries to have an answer for these countries as they try to pivot into more opportunity. These people took to the streets based on what they learned in the social networks and in their own travels, in the fact that the world is a smaller place, much more globalized, and things are happening at a much more rapid pace. We have to be more agile. We have to be more proactive in this century in order to achieve the results that we hope to achieve. We're still in that transition space, I think, in my view. I think you have to be very careful about how you say things. For example, when we say we're pivoting to Asia, the Africans will point out, as it was pointed out to me last week in Africa, that that's interesting. Asia is pivoting towards Africa. Does that mean you're not going to compete in Africa? The answer to that should be no, but the words are important. You have to be careful how you use them. So I do think that that the United States leadership can be the same as it was, but it'll be have a different context to it in terms of who our partners are. Most of the people of the developing world want the kind of life that we take for granted, and we should do everything we can to try to make sure that that opportunity is there, and we should do that as quickly as we can, because the longer it takes to make that mark and to set those set that bar so the people can the people in the affected countries can say, oh, I like that. I like this economic plan. I like how they're talking about governance and rule of law and a new constitution. We can help that, and we should partner with like-minded nations to do that. We don't have to do it by ourselves anymore, which is good. And I think that this is what's going to link up, I think, the developed world from the developing world, and the United States should play a key leadership role in that.
General Wald, what about the geopolitical landscape? How does that all factor in?
Well, I absolutely agree with General Jones. I mean, I think he put it perfectly. I think that we are such an interconnected world today, primarily because of economics and global economics, if you will. There's emerging markets. If you look at, it's obvious what China and India are growing incrementally in a huge way. They'll be part of the market. They hopefully will be part of the security solution, we hope. But if you look at the need for protection of the global commons, for example, the fact that the sea lanes are there for everybody, as the sky is, as space is, and now cyber security, those are all things that aren't just necessarily interesting to the United States. They're interesting to all of our potential partners and economic partners particularly. So we can't do all this alone in the United States anymore, and General Jones, I think, put it very clearly. So part of our interest is to build partnerships around the world that have common interests and through maybe interoperability, common equipment sometimes, but common procedures. That's where I think Deloitte really fits in well, is we are present in 144 countries around the world. I mean, I think the statement General Jones made about virtual presence is actual absence is exactly what the new world's all about. So it's kind of like they say, if you're not there, you're not there. And Deloitte is there. So I think the world we live in has changed dramatically over the last 10 years. We've been focused, as we should have, I think, on Afghanistan and Iraq as far as our focus. But from the standpoint of the world, it's shifted well beyond that. And so I believe, as General Jones said, we're a global world. We're interconnected. We have to be partnered with other people. And I think we're postured well for that.
Well, we've seen, though, in Libya and other areas, forming these partnerships becomes kind of ad hoc sometimes in terms of who's going to join you, who can't join you. Everybody's got the same, I think, economic problems and financial problems that our country does at this point. The UN is singularly incapable of acting in unison on any issue. So you see roving partnerships, regional partnerships. How do you see this playing out?
And frankly, yes. I mean, I first of all, I'd say this. I think, and again, this is not because I'm an American, but I think there's a need for U.S. leadership in the world still. And General Jones can talk to this better than me. But when you talk to our friends overseas, even in the larger countries, they still look to America for leadership. So that hasn't changed. So we have to be part of that. From the standpoint of organizations that are actually going to be governing the world, I think that's kind of to be determined. I think much of it will be ad hoc based on common interests. We have to be flexible and nimble. On the other hand, I think we have to start continuing to build those relationships. And for example, some of our equipment that we are going to export overseas will have a common capability that we can always build on when we have these ad hoc situations you talked about. So I think it's a world that will be unpredictable. You'll have to be flexible. You'll have to be present. You'll have to be able to be there. And that's where we're going, I believe.
General Jones, you're a national security advisor to the president. I mean, you have a global perspective on this as well.
No, I think Chuck said it very well. I would just simply add that I think in this new century, even though we've used up over 10% of it already, that the public-private link has to become much closer. We've had the luxury in the 20th century of we've been a kind of a one-trick pony with the military and the forward presence and the bases. And in a bipolar world, that worked very well for us. We set up a lot of institutions that were focused on reactive policies, reactive to what the Russians did or didn't do. But that was really the only threat, the only real serious threat. But now it's a multipolar world. It's messy. It's not only nation states, it's non-nation state actors. And we have to figure out a way to compete in that arena, and we have to be more agile. And I've been heartened recently by learning about Deloitte and the 144 countries that you're in. That means you're engaged. That means you're a player. Now, does that mean that the government leaves you alone to play, and to fend for yourself? Maybe in some cases, but in most cases, probably not. Wouldn't the Department of Commerce like to know what you're doing in 144 countries and how they can be helpful? Are there some laws on the books that are hindering you from competing against China or India or any other country? I mean this in a healthy way. That's the kind of thing that we need. I recently got back from Rwanda in Africa and had a dinner with the president just 3 nights ago. And, his question to me was, I've been holding off various other countries waiting for America. Where are you? Where's the United States in Africa? We need your engagement. We need your companies. We will do more for our nation by influencing, by showing good example, good business practice, honest integrity, in our operations, no bribery of foreign officials, but delivering a quality product, which other countries can't do if we really set our mind to competing. But you need that public-private partnership, and I think that's the evolution that we're seeing. You need to have a very active Chamber of Commerce, for example, and we need to be tied into that. So between the State Department, the Commerce Department, and the Chamber of Commerce, and also the security portfolio by virtue of our presence, has a calming effect on regions and lets us get on with bridging the gap between the developed world and the developing world.
General, it sounds like the economic strategy is as important as the military strategy then as we look ahead.
I think, Congressman, I think the big difference between the 20th and 21st century is that this century, forgetting the real threats that we talk about every day in the paper, but this century is about rediscovering American competitiveness overseas.
Chuck, you got anything to add? You've spent a lot of time overseas.
No, I did. As a matter of fact, I was fortunate to work with General Jones overseas for him for several years. And one of the things, just kind of going back to this whole topic about presence and how we should respond to it, we had a study done that by the GAO at that time, that we asked, what's the difference between the money you spend on engagement, pre-engagement, stability operations, or prevention, if you will, versus reaction, and it was about $1 for every $10. So every dollar you put into prevention by building stability in a certain country or relationships or, better yet, economy, is going to save you about $10 in the long run. That's a difficult thing to argue when you've avoided conflict, but that's the new world we live in. I mean, it's not totally, but I think that's how we're going to have to really solve some of our problems in the future.
Sounds like the Tom Friedman talks about the McDonald's theory of warfare, where countries that both have McDonald's restaurants don't go to war with each other because they're too busy making burgers, eating burgers, and selling burgers, and the risks of war get escalated.
Yeah, I think he's got some pretty good insights when you read his op-eds.
It's a pretty good, concept, because most people get that. But the difficult part is finding the resources and bring them together across the interagency. I'd say another way to describe the environment we're in is that the solutions require a whole-of-government approach, and that includes the private sector. While you can't be everywhere, if you want to prevent, say, Nigeria from becoming the next Afghanistan, you need to start working on Nigeria now. And it's a lot cheaper. Believe me, it's a lot cheaper than having to be reactive when it's too late.
Gentlemen, we'll have to stop it there, but thank you very much. Fascinating conversation. Our guests, General Charles F. Wahl, Director, Deloitte Services, LP, and the leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense Practice, General James Jones, United States Marine Corps, formerly National Security Advisor and Senior Advisor for Deloitte, and then finally, the Honorable Tom M. Davis, former Virginia Congressman and Chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, and he's also a Director for Deloitte Government Affairs. We thank you all for listening today, and we'll see you again next time. This is Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jane Norris.
This has been Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM with Jane Norris, your host. Make sure to tune in again in 2 weeks for another edition of Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and on federalnewsradio.com/FedCentral.
Defense and civilian agencies call upon Deloitte for the insights and experience they bring to their most complex challenges, drawing from global resources, leading practices across government and industry, and a portfolio of capabilities in technology, data analytics, human capital, supply chain, and beyond. They help clients across defense and civilian achieve more today while building a stronger foundation for tomorrow. Learn more at www.deloitte.com/federal. Deloitte, helping government help America.
Hey, it's Mike Jakaitis at the editor's desk. Many of you have supported me through my colon cancer journey, and I'm happy to report that I've been cancer-free for 5 years now. Coming up is our annual chance to help an organization near and dear to my heart, the Chris for Life Colon Cancer Foundation. I'll be running in their 7th annual Scope It Out 5K Run Walk for Colon Cancer Awareness, and I would love it if you would join me in my quest. The event will be held on Sunday, March 25th in the heart of D.C. It kicks off at Freedom Plaza and includes a scenic tour of many popular sites. Over 150,000 new cases were diagnosed in 2011, and the D.C. metro area ranks number one in the nation to lives lost to colon cancer. So form a team, honor a loved one, help raise funds to crush colon cancer. Event information and registration is at scopeitout5k.com. That's scopeitout5k.com. Hope to see you there.